The House on Portagee Hill. After his divorce, John moved into a small house near the edge of town, on the east side. Jacksonville was growing, a product of an expanding world, but it had made its expansion west and south. The east side was low rent and abandoned cars for the most part. Development would come this way only as a last resort. The Movistar Creek wound around the lowlands and cut a winding pattern in the hilly terrain. Interestingly enough, this is where the earliest homesteaders came. With a source of water and plenty of land with good black dirt, this area was settled by Portuguese immigrants. To this day, the high ground is still called Portagee Hill. The initial population attracted the primary industries for the city to be: brickyards, slaughterhouses, and buggy factories. When the steel fabricator and paint factory opened in the early part of the century, the fate of the area was sealed, and the people began to slowly ooze west. Once a blemish, always a blemish, it seems. Now the east side is forever frozen in time, and Portagee Hill stands like a beacon marking the decay, railroads and tar paper. The east side seemed like a good idea to John. He had so little left. The farm was technically his wife's, so she, being the farmer's daughter, naturally stayed where her father had put them. Their only child was grown and on her own in Seattle. John had few possessions, few hobbies, and even fewer friends. When the marriage dissolved, he took his dogs, guns, and dignity and moved out. Life is like that sometimes. John wasn't very selective about his living arrangements, and his requirements were meager. The house had to be inexpensive, small, and relatively safe, and it had to have room for his dogs. The realtor was excited. She didn't see people like John very often, and it was obvious that he would be an easy sell. First, they visited a few apartment-style houses in town, just as a courtesy. But she knew what he was looking for, and it sounded like a chance to unload something from her difficult-to-sell list, like the house on Portagee Hill. John knew it was the place for him as soon as he saw it. To a passer-by, it was a junkyard. The house needed paint badly. There was an obvious roofing problem over the small porch, and quite a bit of light hauling would be needed to reveal the front yard. The backyard was in a similar state, but the empty fence posts caught John's eye. There had been dogs here before. There would be again. He had neighbors, a divorcee and her son. Gwen and Kyle's house was next to his, but the next nearest neighbor was several hundred feet down the road. The realtor kept up a steady barrage of sales speak, but John wasn't listening. He was sold already. He made an offer, she took it, and the papers were signed a few days later. John was happy for the first time in his life, it seemed. The house was in terrible shape, but it gave him something to do between work shifts. There was no social life. Being on his own after so many years of wedded despondency, the freedom was new to him. He found it refreshing to be busy with roof repair, landscaping, and painting. The old pickup truck made endless trips to the landfill, and the front and backyards were emerging. It would never be a showplace by any means, but it was becoming clean and presentable. He'd repaired the fences in the backyard dog pen, and Brandy and her beagle family were finally home. His home repair mission continued all through the summer and into the next year. By early spring, he was nearly done with the important stuff, and the house on Portagee Hill was an unusually warm and welcome sight to the area. In the meantime, John had come to an agreement with his neighbor's boy, Kyle. In exchange for free loan of John's beat-up pickup truck, Kyle kept the driveway shoveled and the yard mowed. Kyle was a younger version of John, no father, not much background, not much future, and a girlfriend who would certainly become pregnant, married, and divorced in that order. John found a keen audience in Kyle. The boy would need this experience for what probably awaited him in 10 or 12 years. By midsummer, the junkyard was gone and the roof didn't leak any longer. John's guns were moved into a nice maple display case, his Christmas present to himself. The inside walls had been repainted, and inexpensive carpet had been laid. So had Gwen. Life was better than expected, and his ex-wife was a dim, unpleasant memory. August saw his attractive neighbor sell her run-down house and move in as John's wife. Kyle got a father figure, larger rooms, and a pickup truck. Gwen got a new husband, larger rooms, and a pickup truck. John got smaller rooms, a new wife, and occasional use of the pickup truck. This time, however, there were no fights and no arguments, and John was pleased with the turn of his life. John's dogs were not adjusting to their new home. He had been out hunting with them several times, and they didn't perform well at all. In fact, Brandy, his favorite, had tried to run away on several occasions. She lost all her hunting experience and bolted from the truck as soon as her leash was off. He was terribly disappointed in losing his best rabbit hound, but she had no interest in anything except trying to run. The others were not much better. He still enjoyed going into the woods with them, but the hunting was meager. Brandy spent most of her time on a rope or in the pen. Summer was nearly over, and Kyle was enjoying the last few days of blissful freedom from compulsory education. Gwen still had to work, but John took a week off to finish up a few house projects that lingered on, and perhaps try to take his dogs into the woods again. A curious thing had come to John's notice throughout the summer. In the back of the dog pen, near the furthest corner, a circle of grass was flourishing. He had seen it the months before, yet it didn't merit much attention. But now, with the rest of the pen worn down to dirt by the pacing dogs, it seemed very out of place. The last time Kyle mowed, John had him go in the pen and mow inside the fence as well. But within the last couple of weeks, the grass had grown tall and lush again. Why would the dogs walk everywhere but there? Assuming a circle of broken glass or sharp metal scraps, John went into the pen with a rake to save his dogs from painful paw cuts, not to mention the painful vet bills. He stood next to the grass and noted how perfectly circular it was, not much more than 3 feet across. The edges were fairly well defined. The dogs went so close and no closer. He began to pull the rake through the grass, expecting to find the remains of a 55-gallon burning barrel and all the beer cans and wine jugs it probably consumed. What he found was nothing. He got down on his hands and knees and started to move into the grass, parting it with his fingers and looking closely at the ground below. As he moved into the circle, a wave of raw feelings poured over him like a bucket of cold water, feelings so intense they took his breath away. He gasped and pulled back, landing hard on his butt in the dirt. It was as if someone had hit him on the head from behind or crushed his lungs flat with a bear hug. He was so disoriented and dizzy, he felt like he was about to pass out. John sat there in the dirt, momentarily stunned, and the feelings passed as quickly as they had overtaken him. All of the beagles were huddled together on the far side of the doghouse, as silent and still as could be. John got up and stared at the grassy circle. A cool breeze was blowing, and the blades were moving slowly in the wind. He stood there scratching his head and mulling over the sudden onset of such intense feelings. Perhaps a blood pressure drop or an inner ear infection had hit him as he bent down to the ground. John reached over to the fence to take the rake and stepped onto the circle of green grass. Brandy yelped, and John felt the wave of panic and nausea return like a locomotive. He fell to his knees in the center of the circle and looked up into the sky with unseeing eyes. Privately, he was falling into blackness, a place where everything miserable and depressing were forced through his mind. Cold beyond cold, dark beyond dark. John felt such despair as he could not have imagined. The dirt hit him hard as he collapsed into the dog pen, crying like a baby. He had hit the dirt nearly face first, and the taste of it was in his mouth. The feelings that had gripped him so completely were gone again, a memory like a dream. It had only just happened, and already he was having difficulty remembering exactly what it was, what it felt like, but the tears streaming down his cheeks were very real. John got slowly to his feet, wiping his eyes with the back of his shirt sleeve. What the hell was wrong with him? Suspecting a heart attack or an aneurysm, he plodded toward the gate. Everything was quiet, too quiet. There were no birds and no dogs, and he began to look around. The beagles were all cowered in the back of the doghouse. He could see only a small part of one set of hindquarters. As he bent down to look in, they began to whimper and cry. Damn peculiar. John went into the house, showered, and slept for most of the rest of the day, dreaming troubled dreams. The next day, after Gwen had gone to work, John went to the dog pen and looked in through the fence wire. The dogs seemed normal enough now. They were running back and forth expecting food or attention. They got neither. The circle of grass lay in the rear of the pen, undisturbed and avoided. John stared at the area for a great deal of time, and then went to the shed. Returning with a two-handled post-hole digger, he unlatched the gate and slipped into the dog pen. Brandy and the rest of the troop were their usual selves, all clamoring for the master's hand. John began to move to the back of the pen, and the dogs fell behind, giving him more room the closer to the grassy circle he got. Standing at the edge, he again realized that the dogs had again gone silent. He approached the circle and stopped with the toe of his boot, just touching the edge of the grassy area. As he raised the post-hole digger, Brandy lay down whimpering, and the rest were sitting quietly. He struck the ground hard, and the digger bit into the grass and dirt, but he was careful to remain outside of the circle. He dumped the digger's mouthful on the ground and bent down to investigate. It was clean dirt, dark and moist. Crumbling it between his fingers, he discovered ants and the back half of an ordinary earthworm. The lush grass was just plain old grass. It felt like grass. It smelled like grass. He turned back and raised the digger. Again he plunged it down into the center. Again he withdrew and dropped the load on the ground. After a few minutes there was a sizable pile of dirt and grass next to the circle, and the hole was large enough to have set a fence post. John dug through the dirt pile over and over, scattering it around the pen. The dug-up grass was beginning to wilt a bit, and he had found exactly nothing. Perhaps deeper. John tightened his work gloves and gripped the handles of the digger strongly. He raised it again and stepped into the circle. Blinding, searing pain ripped through his head. He released the tool and clawed at his temples. The unbelievable feelings of hatred and despair and utter hopelessness. Again they washed over him like water, and he fell to his knees, sobbing and crying. He was lying face up on a barge, floating in a sea of putrid ugliness. He couldn't close his eyes or shut out the sounds of millions of voices all weeping and crying in chorus. His life was ended and worthless. All that was left was to rip out his own heart with his own fingers, but his body was paralyzed. The world began to spin, and vomit and putrescence poured from every orifice. His screams were drowned in a pool of blood. Suddenly, all was quiet. He opened his eyes and looked up into the boy's face. Kyle had heard the screaming and had pulled him from the pen. The screaming had stopped the instant his stepfather's face hit the dirt outside of the grassy circle. Kyle helped him into the house and waited outside of the bathroom door as he listened to him wash and cry and vomit. Later, John had settled a bit and was fairly clean. He had lost absolutely everything in his stomach and was actually a bit hungry. Going into the kitchen, he caught sight of Kyle through the window. He was in the pen, staring at the circle. For a fleeting moment, he thought about calling out to him, to beg him to back away, but he was interested. His son had mowed the area before, and had never mentioned anything unusual. Something was there. Maybe Kyle would find it. Kyle picked up the post-hole digger and moved to the grassy circle. John held his breath and felt the blood pounding in his ears. Kyle took a step inside the circle, raised the tool, and began to enlarge the hole. John watched for something to happen. Nothing did. After a few minutes, Kyle stopped and peered into the now larger hole. Shaking his head, he leaned the tool against the fence and turned to leave the pen. He saw the dogs. They were all cringing on the opposite side of the doghouse, hovering together and in constant motion, each trying to get to the center of the group. As Kyle moved around the doghouse, the dogs moved as well, staying on the opposite side. He shook his head and said something to them as he turned and left the pen. It was hard to explain to the boy what was happening. How could someone explain the unexplainable? How to describe the indescribable? John tried to make sense of it all, but could not. There were all manner of explanations, ranging from the simple to the sublime. Perhaps a leaking gas main and John being hyperallergic. Perhaps an unknown phobia buried deep in the subconscious. Perhaps a brain tumor. Anything was possible. Kyle didn't understand, and John didn't expect him to. The only thing real was what he felt when he stepped into the circle. The next day, father and son were in the pen again, this time with shovels. Kyle started digging seriously, and John managed the growing pile of dirt. Each scoop widened the hole and deepened the mystery. Kyle's shovel was bringing up more innocent dirt and bugs, and John's sifting was exposing nothing. By late morning, the hole was 4 feet deep and considerably larger around than the original circle. The dogs kept their distance. Kyle finally surrendered to fatigue and climbed out of the hole. The pair remained for several minutes while John scuffed through the loose dirt with his shoe, looking for anything. The dogs would have even less to do with Kyle now. As he moved around to the gate, they were trapped behind the doghouse. They would not approach John, yet they were repelled by Kyle. They had no means of escape. He moved slowly toward the writhing mass of beagles as they compressed into a tighter and tighter group. As he reached down to pet the closest, they all collapsed with their heads on the ground, eyes screwed shut and whimpering as if they had all been beaten. Kyle raised up and backed slowly out of the gate. The dogs came back on their feet and moved away from the pair as far as they could. John's jaw hung slack as he watched the spectacle. The pair finally came into the house and washed up. Gwen returned home after work and wondered at the unusual silence that had enshrouded their home. Supper was eaten without a word, and all three went to bed, quite disturbed. John simply would not speak, and Kyle was not much help to her either. She saw the hole in the dog pen, and assumed it had been a strain on her husband's heart. He wasn't young, so she let him sleep. At 2 a.m., John was startled awake. Lying silently in bed, he heard his wife's gentle breathing, mixed with the house's night noises, the clicks and pops of cooling rafters and mice. But there was something else. A cocktail party, perhaps. Maybe lovers strolling and talking on the dark road. More like whispering. The harder he tried to focus on it, the more remote it sounded. He got up and went to the bathroom. Gwen stirred, but did not awaken. John shut the door, snapped on the light, and looked into the mirror. It was his face looking back, but the lines were drawn deeper, and he looked much older. A small drop of dried blood crusted the end of his nose. Something was wrong. He felt different, unclean. He splashed water on his face and rubbed it with a towel. Something was still there, just under, just behind. He just didn't know. From down the hall he heard Gwen sneeze, and he snapped the light off and stood in the darkness for the longest time. He could hear the babbling sounds from here, too. Now it was a bit more distinct, a bit clearer. Like a robot following a predetermined plan, John left the bathroom and went out the back door. Standing on the porch, he could see his dogs all piled up on each other, sleeping in the near corner of the pen by the gate, away from the hole. The soft crescent moonlight showed little else. He saw the shovels leaning against the fence wire and walked out to the pen. As he approached, the dogs all awoke at the same time, and without a sound marched single file into the doghouse. The world was silent except for the distant murmuring. John opened the gate and entered the pen. The voices were louder here, yet they were as indistinct as ever. He approached the hole and peered in. Kyle had dug so far down that there was a tiny bit of water and mud in the bottom, just glistening a little in the meager moonlight. The water table was not much further down. John stood motionless for nearly a half hour, propped on the shovel handle, just staring down into the hole, trying to make out the sounds. Sometimes they seemed behind him, then above him, then below him. Whenever he turned his head to locate the noise, it shifted elsewhere. Brandy had her nose just barely out of the doghouse, watching her old hunting partner and master. She whimpered too softly to hear. Finally, John sighed and straightened up. As he turned to leave, a small piece of soil at the top edge of the hole came loose and disappeared from under his foot. Caught momentarily off balance, he waved his arms about as the shovel fell into the pen and he into the hole, landing with a hard thud. The crawling chaos was on him immediately. Waving his arms in open space, he tried to grasp at anything he could to stop the spinning. His guts were being drawn from his body with a rusty spike, and fire was breathing through his eye sockets. The pain was beyond overwhelming. It was ultimate. His body, racked with unreal pain of living intensity, lived on and lived on and lived on. For days and weeks and months and years, the torment continued unabated. John passed from one world of pain to another, and to another yet. And then he was dropped over the highest cliff, tumbling and vomiting into a chasm that seemed to have no bottom. The fall lasted a lifetime, all the while his body was being burned away by a fire brighter and hotter than creation. The fall lasted until it ended with a thud. John lay in the hole crying, covered with his own vomit, urine, and shit. The sun was just beginning to make itself known on the horizon as he clawed his way up out of the hole, a beaten man. He crawled to the fence, thrust his arms through the wire for support, and stared out into the yard, a kneeling crucifix. As the first rays of morning light fell onto his face, everything became clear. He understood it all. John was one with the cosmos, and the unholy alliance had taught him all that could be known. The million mysteries that weaved their way through the fabric of his life were revealed, and a warm, comforting light shined through his mind. The voices were still all around him, but they had all synchronized. The chorus spoke through a single mouth, his. In a language unknown, John closed his eyes and spoke to the sky. With the subtleties of poetry, the words gurgled and belched from his lips. Vaguely musical chants drifted on the morning air. He sighed a long, tired sigh and pulled away from the fence. As he stood up, his eyes slowly opened and began to take in the morning light. Gathering his robe about him, John turned and started toward the gate. He stopped beside the pile of broken dogs and gently scratched Brandy's bloody, dismembered head. Her lifeless eyes were glazed over, and what remained of her broken body was scattered and mixed with the mutilated remains of her friends. John smiled, stretched, and walked slowly to the house. He stopped in the kitchen long enough to fill the Mr. Coffee and put a new filter and ground Colombian beans in. He stood transfixed as the water began to move through the lifeless device. As he turned, the sweet smell of dark roast was just beginning to bud. Turning into the living room, he went to the gun case and brought out his .44 from the bottom drawer. He loaded it and walked back to the hallway, licking the barrel like a sucker. The house was quiet, and the coffee smell was wafting through on the pre-morning breeze. Walking slowly down the hallway, one foot, then the other, like a wedding march, he turned into the bedroom and stood watching his wife's slow breathing. She was so pretty and would understand soon enough. He placed one knee on his side of the bed, pressing it down slightly, and Gwen turned slowly toward him, making a soft puppy sound. As she opened her eyes, he placed the barrel in her mouth and blew her brain through the pillow and into the mattress below. John smiled. Normally, Kyle would sleep through anything, but the loud report at daybreak was enough to rouse and confuse him, and John met him in the dimly lit hallway. Wondering what the noise was all about, he thought that it had come from outside and perhaps they should investigate. As Kyle turned his back, the same loud roar appeared again from behind and he was thrown to the floor, the right side of his head missing. Again, John smiled. The rest of the day was spent at hard labor. The phone had rung several times, probably Gwen's work or Kyle's friends, but stopped the moment the wire was ripped out of the wall. The fence posts were pulled up one by one from the dog pen and positioned as garden edging around the front of the house. He thought that would be pretty. The fence wire was dragged to the front yard and left near the driveway. Using coat hangers and duct tape, John reconstructed his beagle hounds as best he could. Placing Brandy in the lead, he produced a hunter's diorama of the truly macabre. The backyard was a fitting place for it. It wouldn't do to have someone else see it from the road before it was finished. His dogs never looked better. John wiped his bloody hands on his bloody robe and smiled. He filled in the hole in the back of the pen and covered it over smooth. He lay for the longest time on top of the fresh, dark earth, listening to the sweet music and comforting voices within. His mind was peaceful and quiet, and he celebrated in his new understanding of the cosmos. For the first time since he was born, John had no questions about life and no misunderstandings about his place in it. His final act was to relocate the rose bushes from the side of the house to their new home in the fresh dirt. The circle would have its privacy once again. John spent several minutes standing and gazing out over his new backyard. How lovely it all looked. Yes, a fine day's work indeed. Now he was ready for the next phase of his existence. He pulled the .44 out of his robe pocket and fired up through the bottom of his chin, spraying himself into the air. His body dropped, and what was left of his face was smiling. It was nearly 2 years before the police and the lawyers and the probate courts finally released all their holds on the house on Portaquay Hill. What was left of John and Gwen's meager savings had been routed to the appropriate heirs, and the newspapers had long since moved on from the unresolved, bizarre story. The police relegated the murder-suicide to the gone-mad file. There just wasn't anything left to investigate. The vacant house didn't take long to return to its previous state. The leak in the porch roof had returned, the walls needed paint, and the premises looked vaguely like a junkyard once again. The backyard is not in much better condition. There's a large pile of rusted junk piled up near the back of the property. Near it is a pretty area, circular, with green grass and rose bushes. Oddly, though healthy and green, the roses never bloom. The realtors have placed the house on Portagee Hill back on their difficult-to-sell list. A real fixer-upper, they call it.